Good evening. Let's begin with singing.
Jesus, bless us, Jesus, thou hast brought us, I, we are.
This evening's topic is on giving to charities. And so I'll be having a little devotional, and then instead of a topic as such, we'll be having three people share about, each person sharing about an organization, a charitable organization, and something that you could give to. Perhaps we should think of giving as a skill. Like anything requiring skill, it can be done either well or poorly. In 2 Corinthians 8, Paul was talking about giving, and he admonished them like this. But as you excel in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in all earnestness, and in our love for you, see that you excel in this act of grace also. For instance, Bernard Marcus, who was the founder of the Home Depot, gave $200 million to build an aquarium in Atlanta. Now, I don't have anything against aquariums, but I think he gave poorly. And so how do we decide where to give, how to give? There's definitely no shortage of organizations that would like to have your money, and or I should say God's money. And so how do you decide which one? And I'd also just like to mention that Randy Alcorn did give me some help in preparing a few thoughts here. First of all, I think our local church is our first responsibility. And so for its programs and the organization it supports, I think, are our first priority. But I don't think that our giving necessarily needs to be limited to that. I think there's two basic criteria a charitable organization that deserves money, I think, should generally fall into two criteria. Does it help the materially poor or the spiritually lost? Most worthwhile organizations will be endeavoring to assist with one of those two things. And while keeping panda bears alive on the face of the earth for the next generation is a noble pursuit, perhaps it's not the best thing. If it helps the poor, does it help those who are truly poor because of things outside their control? Does it help them in a way that tends to help poor people get on their feet? Or does it tend to create dependence? So, in other words, does it helpfully help the helpless? If it helps the spiritually lost, how effective is the ministry? Do you agree with the theology and philosophy of those in charge? Is it a ministry that doesn't depend on outsiders to be there in order for spiritual life to continue? So, in other words, are they actually planting the gospel, or are they just sort of broadcasting it? For both physical and spiritual ministry, it's good to look at whether the administrative costs are relatively low. The flip side of that is also that is to ask the question whether the organization pays its staff enough that they can keep good quality staff as well. I think it's good to consider visiting whatever ministry you'd like to support. Sometimes it looks a little different in real life than it did on paper, and so I'd encourage us to do that as we can. But I think the bottom line really is to listen to God. He does have a definite interest in how we spend our money and how we spend His money, actually. And so let's try to be sensitive to Him and spend wisely. That's all that I have on that. What are your prayer requests? All right. Okay, well, the people sharing with us this evening will be, Joel will be sharing with us about faith comes by hearing, and Dad about open door, and Leroy about the Mennonite Manor. And so I'll go ahead and let them come up in that order.
First, perhaps just a bit of a disclaimer. We had three organizations.
Is that better? Okay. Just a bit of a disclaimer first. We've got three organizations here this evening. That's a fairly small sampling of the number of potential worthy organizations out there. So I'm hoping that this evening you'll get three windows into the world of opportunity that's out there. But they are only three windows, and I'm hoping you'll open some more. Well, I thought I'd give a bit of an introduction to an organization, Faith Comes by Hearing. Someone had actually suggested that we talk about this organization, and it seemed like an excellent idea to me. I learned about this organization from Ellis and have been somewhat involved for a while. But for how many of you does the name Faith Comes by Hearing ring a bell? A decent representation. Well, Faith Comes by Hearing is an organization that started sometime in the 70s. A couple was doing mission work on a Hopi reservation. And one day they came across this room. And in this room were a large number of beautiful Bibles in the Hopi language. But they were in a back room somewhere because these printed Bibles simply weren't that useful for the Hopi people. I don't know what the literacy rate was in that group at that time, but the printed word wasn't particularly helpful in that case. So from that, Jerry and Annette Jackson formed the organization Faith Comes by Hearing. It's taken from a Bible verse, possibly somewhat out of context, but this organization records and distributes audio Bibles, essentially, in many different languages, in many different media, in many different places. Just a bit of background for the need for this. Most of this information is taken from their website. First, approximately 50% of the world is illiterate. Second, approximately 43% of American adults test at or below basic literacy. Beyond that, though, there are other reasons that the printed word... Well, going back. If you select a person at random from around the world, again, you've got a 1 in 2 chance that they can actually read. Beyond that, though, a lot of cultures simply are not oriented toward the printed word. They're oriented toward stories, toward narrative, toward the spoken word. And Faith Comes by Hearing works with many partners. They work with Wycliffe, with, I think, various broadcast organizations. But with Wycliffe, they're in an agreement where when Wycliffe translates a Bible into a new language, there are approximately 6,800 language groups, according to Faith Comes by Hearing's estimate. When Wycliffe translates a Bible, Faith Comes by Hearing will follow behind and record an audio translation. They've got various media, some tailored to Americans, some tailored to places many miles from electrical power.
But if you're in America or from anywhere with internet access, you can download MP3s to play on your computer or on a portable music player. You can purchase Bible sticks, which are basically portable audio players with the entire Bible recorded. You can also, well, Faith Comes By Hearing also provides a gadget called the Proclaimer, a crank-powered MP3 player and loudspeaker, essentially, that has been used in schools, in prisons, in villages, in many different places across the world. So, basically, their goal is to get the word out, so that everyone has an opportunity to hear the Bible. They also have some programs focused on the American church, on convincing people that you have the time to be familiar with the Bible. And you can actually download free audio Bibles from their website. Just a few random snippets. Go to their website for more. But one that has a bit of connection with us here is Faith Comes By Hearing has a translation project or a recording project going on in Orissa State. Apparently, three of their readers have been killed. Faith Comes By Hearing encouraged them to stop the production process for now and stay safe. They apparently opted to keep on going, and so that's one recording station out of, I think, 24 around the world. In Chile, there's a church leader listening to an audio Bible to learn how to lead his congregation. You know, I think that is a case that you'll see in many places around the world, where the leaders of churches may not be that much more educated or that much more familiar with Christianity, really, than those who they're trying to lead. In Ethiopia, a guy was in prison for murder and came to Christ through a proclaimer. So, one of the biggest ways for most of us to participate with Faith Comes By Hearing is simply through donation. They do also look for international connections, for volunteer help, and for involvement of various sorts. But I think one big way that we can help is simply through financial contributions. Anyway, that's one small window. I have contact information for the organization here and would be quite glad to share that or to share more about it just one-to-one. Thank you.
Is it okay if I use this? Yeah, I need to spread out my papers here. This is a joint project. Actually, initially, Rebecca was asked to do this presentation, and then we ended up working together on it. And I guess this evening I kind of take the Aaron-like approach here to this project. We interviewed Teresa Salmons with the Open Door Pregnancy Care Center. And it was just it was a blessing and encouragement again to see this local opportunity. It's a great opportunity that is waiting at our back door, and there are many needs that we have in our community. The Open Door Pregnancy Center is a local ministry to those in crisis pregnancy situations. The headquarters is located at 24 West 4th Street here in Hutchinson. Their mission statement is this: the mission of Open Door Pregnancy Care Center is to minister to those in crisis pregnancy situations, present the gospel of Jesus Christ, and to preserve and affirm life as a precious gift from God. You see, there's a teen pregnancy every 31 seconds in the United States. And there are, in just this year, they have seen 475 clients come through their doors, about a third of those being new clients, and the other two-thirds being return clients, and some that they would have probably ongoing kinds of interactions with. Young women come to the center very depressed and confused, not knowing where to turn, usually in difficult circumstance. And so their goal is to bring Christ to young women who are what they would call abortion vulnerable, and they want to, each contact they have, present the gospel or present a spiritual conversation every time. Their vision, perhaps I'll give their vision statement. It's this. It's a fourfold. The vision is, one, for many to come to know Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. Two, to see the lives of the unborn children preserved and raised up in His love, revealing the miracle of life to those who are abortion-minded. And three, reach out to promote moral purity, to give value to each individual as seen by God. And fourth, effectively meet the physical and emotional needs of our clients, that they may face the future with hope in their new life in Jesus Christ. And so there's a number of things. And of course, those of you who know Teresa know that she'll be very quick to say that the greatest need that they have is prayer, and that whatever good happens comes because people pray and support the work in that way. And yet you realize that probably no organization will work on just prayer unless people are also willing to act. But people who pray tend to also be those who are willing to act. Of course, we first became aware of the work there through their fall fundraising banquet. And they have chosen to provide a large share of their funding through this fall banquet. It takes a lot of work. They're already planning for the banquet for next October. I guess it'll be October. Yeah, probably would be in October, I guess, is when the next banquet will be. And so it does take a lot of work and effort, but then that is where a large share of their money comes in. Their operating budget might run around, I think for this past year, one figure that I heard was $95,000, and this year they had $55,000 raised in their fundraising banquet. So that has been a real blessing, and so that is one of the ways, of course, that work is funded and moves forward. They have a five-member board that oversees the operation, and it would be interest to some of you to know that Ron Knisley is the chairman of the board, and of course his wife Bev is the administrative assistant, and they have both been very active and have been helping to provide leadership there. And they could use another board member too. If someone would feel constrained to help out in this way, that would be a blessing. For a number of years, there were the board did not even have male leadership, and we saw that, and so we're glad to see that it now does have that. One of the and so of course we were talking with Teresa, and there are a number of ways in which they can use help there. One of the things she said is that right now they could well use a volunteer to organize the benevolence room. You might say, well, what's the benevolence room? Well, you might think of this as being a baby supplies room. They have, as an encouragement to their clients to go through a course of study, they make things available, baby supplies available. And if they go through a 12 lesson course, I think it's a 12-week course, then they can get an item from the baby supplies room. Or if they go through their study program, counseling and study program, then they can earn points that they can then use, that they can use out of this same room. And so Teresa said, we need someone that can kind of boost and brighten that place, get it organized and work in it. So, you know, maybe there's a mother-daughter team, or maybe there's several young women who would just like to go in regularly and help organize, get things in shape, and I think that could be a real blessing. One of the things too, one of the fundraising efforts that they do is what they call the baby bottle program. That's why I have the baby bottle here. There's also another 20 or 30 or 40 more bottles in the back. And what they like for individuals to do is to take these home and fill them up with just that extra cash that you might have lying in the bottom of your drawer, and then bring them back full. And it can be either coins or currency or bills, either one, as far as that's concerned. And that is a way to help a little bit. But Teresa was saying that more important than the cash is to use these as prayer reminders. Of course, hopefully you won't keep them too long. You'll bring them back, and you'll pray longer than what you just see the bottles. But prayer continues to be an important need there, and perhaps if we could take this basket of empty bottles back with full bottles, it would be a blessing there. Are there questions that you might have? Perhaps we'll just give time for a question or two. Or is there anything else that, Rebecca, you're thinking that maybe I should have mentioned? Okay, yes, Julian. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. And if someone feels led to provide counseling services there, I'm sure they can use more counselors too. I might just mention that in this past year, there's several more statistics here. She did say that 95 women have decided to parent. There are 5 women who chose adoption, and then of course they had one that did decide to go ahead and choose abortion. So we need to pray for those as well. So there's an opportunity to help and to bless here locally. Any other questions? Yes, Sam. There are other organizations like that. I'm not aware that they are I think they're basically operating as an independent organization there, yes, although they may network with others as well. They do also, one thing I failed to mention, they also offer ultrasound services there. Dr. Peggy Raitt works with that, might even be needing a nurse to help with that. And some of these teens who come in, when they see the ultrasound, are impressed. You know, hear the heartbeat, are impressed that, oh, this is not a baby to be aborted. This baby is for real and should be protected. And so the ultrasound program has been a real blessing there as well. So they are also working on trying to reach younger people and trying to get closer to be more proactive, and we just recognize that in our community we have crying needs of presented by many dysfunctional homes, and we do well to be asked the Lord what He would have us do. Thank you.
Somebody brought their toys there, I see. The Mennonite Manor. Now, I was thinking just a little bit with the opening there, helpfully help the helpless get on their feet. And it occurred to me that that's not necessarily what happens at the manor. It seems sometimes it's more accurate to say we're helpfully helping the helpless die. And there are two things. You know, what was it, 50% of the world is literate, can read. 100% of the world, of the people in the world, were born, and as far as we know, 100% of them are going to die. So it's pretty much there's a monopoly on that, I guess. Well, the Mennonite Manor, a little bit of the history there. I think it was 1973, it's a little while before I showed up. A number of churches in this community felt strongly enough the burden to care for, to look out for people who could not look out for themselves in the community, that's local, that they got together, raised money, and gathered volunteers and started building a building. And the point wasn't to look out to take care of our own. We thought we were doing that just fine, you know. It was for people in the South Hutch community. And that was seen as a ministry then, and I think it still is a ministry. And sometimes, you know, I didn't really realize this, you know, just driving past, it looked like a huge institution. And I assume institutions have, you know, lots of money coming into them and going out and everything. And it just didn't, you know, I didn't really comprehend what the ministry part of that was until I was part of the board. And so I learned a number of things there, and one of the important things was that the place was there for people who don't know how to play the Mennonite game, and people who simply, we'd like to see people come in who have carefully, you know, filled their IRAs and brought lots of bank account and stuff and can pay for everything, but you know, almost half of the people there can't. They thought they were doing a good job of saving money and you know, an entire saving life savings in 1 year, if they have to have skilled health care, it's all used up and it's gone and they have nothing left. And so if it was, you know, a business model about making money, we'd tell them, you have to leave now. But that doesn't happen. And then we do have income flows, and when I say we, it's the manor. I'm not really part of the board anymore, but I do feel like I'm part of it. There are streams of money that come from the state and from the federal government, that offsets the care that people need, the cost of the care they need, but it does not completely pay for it. And so there's a window there, an ongoing window of opportunity for us as churches and as individuals to make up that difference. And we do it, you know, we have the benefit auction at the Manor every fall, and it helps point out that there's a deficit, but that just does a little tiny bit. It's like a token amount that's raised there, an important amount, but we need lots more than that. And so, you know, it's not quite as flashy as you know, sending missionaries to darkest Africa or wherever, but it's real needs that people have to be taken care of in their weakness, in their old age. I think I'll just point out, I want to say this, I don't have it very organized here, but you know, how I've come to care about the particular situation of dying, and it comes partly from you know, the example and the teaching of Jesus. But in 1994, I read a book by Winwood Reed, and Winwood Reed is not a he's critical of Christians, and this is a quote I've carried with me ever since then from that book, and I'll read it to you. And he said, "Christians believe themselves the exclusive aristocracy of heaven upon earth. They create artificial virtues and set them off against actual vices." Now we'd say, well, he's describing Pharisees. We're not Pharisees. But it really moved me, and I keep looking at that, and I keep thinking, all right, here are all these things I do, and you know, are they artificial virtues or are they actual virtues? Or, you know, how does this work for me? Virtue, you know, is that we think of it as a good word. It comes from Greek and it's about courage. And it's come to mean moral excellence. So that's the question I ask myself, I guess. And I want to point out in just sort of, you know, the part that, I'm sorry, I have to use glasses now. I'm getting old and feeble. I want to point out that this you know, the teaching of Jesus in Matthew 25 seems to me very direct. It's kind of hard to just sort of say, well, that's just metaphorical, or we should do that in some abstract way. And it goes on, and I'll try to just get the point of it, but it's about the judgment when the Son of Man comes in his glory with all the angels with him. Anyway, he goes on to, you know, separate the nations assembled before him, sheep from goats. And I'll start reading when the righteous reply to him, and they say, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you ill or in prison and visit you?" And the king will say to them in reply, "Amen, I say to you, whatever you did for one of the least brothers of mine, you did for me." And that goes on, and there's a pretty clear denouncement of those people who did not do that. And I guess to me, you know, the process I've come through in recognizing, you know, what the manner is, it is feeding the hungry and taking care of the poor, you know, it's no accident that churches sponsor elder care facilities like the manor. It used to be something that the government, or local government, sort of looked after, and we had the county poor farm. And there's a lot of stigma attached with that. It meant if you went there, it meant you didn't have children that would care for you, or you didn't have children at all. And it was substandard. And the church's responses to that was, that's not what people deserve. And we want to do better than that. And so you've sort of got what has made the manor important to me. And I don't have a lot else to say, but if someone has comments or questions, you're welcome to offer those at this time. Well, Joel may be able to answer that better than I can. I'm on the impression there isn't a separate fund. People get the care that they need, and then the accounting department sort of sorts out how much all these things cost, and then there's a reimbursement rate that we get from the government. And that rate, the difference between that rate and how the accounting people have kept track of everything is the shortfall that has to be made up somewhere. Whether they can pay for it or not. Yeah, we don't have this wing. We have a wing that's kind of decrepit, but we don't put all the people there who can't pay fully for their care. Anything else? Yes, Laverne. That's important to recognize. We don't just supply food and clothing, but also a spiritual environment. And we hope that we can bring that in the way that the place is administered, the way it's run. And we stumble sometimes, but we would hope that we have... In our commitment to being Christ-like, we have more to offer than someone who is only concerned about getting a paycheck. Yeah, I would point out, I'm learning stuff because my sister Charity is working as a nurse's aide. It only takes 6 weeks of on-the-job training, and then you're certified, and then you can just go ahead and work like that. You know, it's not very difficult to get what you need to get a start in those skills, and it might be useful to have skills like that sometime. Yes? Thank you. Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. There's one thing I will point out. I know some people from this church with little children who go visit specific people or maybe just go visit. And babies and little children they really brighten the day for elderly people who may not often see kids. So that's an encouragement. You know, if you're a young mother and you want to just get out of the house, you could turn your children loose in the hall and bless everybody and sort of, you know, collect your wits while you're at it too. Yes. So it's an object lesson is what you're saying. I think that's a really good point. We think we're doing all these virtuous things to help other people, and it's actually also very helpful to ourselves to do virtuous things. So it's a win-win situation. Good. Well, I hope. Any last comments? Yes, Ollie. Yeah, and so it is important that we work it so that they feel involved, yeah. And back in the back.
What other churches were involved in founding that have involvement?
Plainview. I think Faith Mennonite, and there are people here who might be able to do this better than me, Yoder Mennonite. Maybe if there was a South Hutch Mennonite at the time, they would have been involved. And then in 73, it would have only been Center, right? Not Cedar Crest. So I think those five. Now the Amish, the Amalek Amish also were very involved, but they didn't want to be formally involved in administrating. But they gave money and donated a lot of time in building. So I think that's it. Do you know any more?
No, I think they included others probably correct me. I don't think they predated Faith Mennonite.
It probably did. It predated me, I can tell you that. At least my presence here. Yes, Perry. They are part now, yes, but I don't think they were part of that early on. Yeah. That's right. Yes. I think, Joel, help me. Eight churches now. And so, yes, Sterling Evangelical, First Mennonite is seven, and not coming up with the eighth one. Yes. Yes, that's it. Thank you. Very good. And some of them were residents and died at the manor. That's right. Yeah. Well, one final thing is I know there are at least two churches that have, as part of their organized giving, they have a line item on their budget and they give money regularly to the manor. So that's appropriate, but it's also appropriate for individuals to just, you know, learn about the manor, make that their burden, and it's kind of nice because you don't have to charter a plane to go to, you know, Africa to see what's happening with your money. You can just go right there and notice that people are being cared for and check and make sure they do a good job with what you've given them. Thank you for your participation in that.
Before our final song, I think Harold has an announcement.